So here's a story about a woman with dreams. So picture perfect at 13 and Ebony Queen. Beneath the surface, it was more than just a quick smile. Nobody knew about a sequel, so it took a while. I could see a tear fall slow down a black tee.
Yes, people, welcome back to my channel. You are watching Cricket Talks episode 6. No, I'm joking. Welcome back to my channel, Cricket Talks episode 6. In this one, I want to sort of, I know my previous ones, I can't remember how many Cricket Talks extra episodes that I talked about Pakistan, New Zealand, and I spoke a lot about it on TikTok. I did a whole thread for a session, a couple sessions during day 5, I think it was, when it got real tight between Pakistan and New Zealand. But I want to use this episode to dedicate towards the test as a whole. Talk through kind of what happened. I'm not going to go into massive amount of detail, try and keep it as concise as possible, and you know, just talk everything around it. So Pakistan, New Zealand, what a test, man. I'll be honest, Pakistan didn't look like they were going to go extremely well. If I'm being very honest, we looked like we were stumbling from day one. We were going well. It was a bit of a roller coaster, if you're not wrong. You know, that's the beauty of test cricket. It's my favorite format by far of all three formats. Whether I'd play them or not is a whole different thing. I'd love to play a 4-day match, see what it feels like physically, but this is the beauty of a test match, because if we're being honest, you know, at the second half of day one, you could say that New Zealand had the game in the bag. In the first half, you'd say Pakistan did. If you're looking at day 5, you're looking at, you know, Pakistan had a bit of hope, and then it got real tight. Every side looked like they had the upper hand at some point during the day. Day four didn't look too good for Pakistan. Day 2 didn't look too great for Pakistan either. So it was a proper roller coaster. A roller coaster is probably the minimum you could say it was. It's a great word to use though. But yeah, it was a roller coaster. Pakistan didn't do extremely well, but they dug in a few special performances. I want to first of all say, in terms of standout performances from Pakistan's point of view, if you've seen the content I put out, I've talked about Pakistan a lot more. I wouldn't mention them at New Zealand, I would talk about them, but from Pakistan, I'd say standout performers for me, 1,000,000% were Fawad Alam. Probably the best batting knock under pressure, I'd say, I've seen from Pakistan test batsmen in a very, very long time. You know, if you're looking at the last few test matches that Pakistan's did really well in, it was probably the Bangladesh series where they played at home just before COVID, if I'm not wrong, where the top three scored 100. But I'm talking about Fawad Alam scoring 100 on a day that New Zealand was looking to clean up the game and Pakistan had a tiny hope of winning, and Mohammad Rizwan and Fawad Alam put up such an incredible knock. If you look at the context around Fawad Alam as a whole, 126 on debut, if I'm not wrong, 12 years left out of international cricket, and then he comes back, a struggling tour against England, a struggling first innings. All eyes are on him, you know, Fawad Alam. The first of all, they're not expecting him to score. And secondly, I'm generalising the support, by the way. But, you know, they're not expecting him to score. And PCB could use this as an excuse to kick him out of the side and bring in another player, like an Asad Shafiq, for example. But he's come in a gritty 102, 150 partnership plus with Mohammad Rizwan. And he brought the game very, very close. If that 100 wasn't there, Pakistan would have had a right clean-up, if we're being very honest. So, yeah, first of all, hats off to Fawad Alam. Probably one of the best knocks by a test batsman in terms of context and importance that I've seen from Pakistan in a while. Another standout performer, Fahim Ashraf. 91 in the first innings. If we're being very honest, nobody expected him to support up 91. With the performances he put up in the T20 and the hope I had him anyway, I'd probably say 50-60 is an extremely respectable score from him. First of all, in the position he's in and the context around it, and he hasn't played test match in about probably what 2.5 years, so he's done well for that. And other standout performers, Rizwan coming in as playing captain, scored 90 in the first innings, no, 90 in the second innings, 70 in the first, if I'm not wrong. Such an incredible knock. And again, context and importance. He's coming at a time where Babar Azam's injured. He was just appointed captain. He's got a lot of pressure on him. As a team, they haven't performed with the bat in the first innings, apart from Mohammad Rizwan himself. Second innings, he put up an amazing partnership with Fawad Alam, brought the game real close, did his job as a keeper. He made all the right choices, if you're being wrong. There weren't any controversial choices by him in terms of bowling picks and, you know, the amount of overs he was giving any particular bowler. I think they were spread pretty evenly, if I'm being honest. Probably the first innings, I'd say Fahim Ashraf could have been bowled a little bit more over the likes of Nassim Shah when he was looking proper expensive. But that did bring the wicket of Henry Nicholls at a time of, you know, perseverance with Nassim Shah and constantly giving him overs because of the trust in him. So fair enough with that. So in that case, Mohammad Rizwan, another standout performer. Mohammad Abbas, there was quite a few times during his spells where he was extremely disciplined. If we're talking about day one, right before lunch, he was impossible to hit, literally. 120 clicks, just bowling a nagging line of length, making the batsman play every single ball, not giving them a chance to leave. And if it is, it's because it's on a really tight line. He never really gave him a chance with a full and wide ball to hit for four or to gain a leading edge. It was constantly nagging line of length, constantly hitting the batsman, not with pace, but with just a good line of length that you can't really score a massive amount of unless you have a quick single, which in test matches aren't necessarily favoured just because of this. You're looking at much more of a low risk shots to play around, and which singles happen, but they were, his economy was great, his line of length was great, he was bowling extremely disciplined. At the start of first innings, Shaheen Afridi, standout performer, took his wicket off his fourth ball, got a nick off the first one. Latham got out for four, off an edge first of all, he got his four runs. But it was an incredible performance from him. It showed the amount of maturity he has with the ball, with the new ball at just 20, 21 years old. And looking like a real consolidated opener for the bowling attack for Pakistan. So we've got Fahim Ashraf, Rizwan, Abbas, Fawad Alam. Are there any other performances? I'd probably say that's it, you know. If we're talking about comebacks, Fahim Ashraf in terms of career, but Nassim Shah had a pretty good return in the second innings. When first innings he was looking pretty down. He was going full and wide a lot of balls. Quite immature bowling, if we're being honest, and it didn't make sense why he didn't correct himself, despite looking at the likes of Shaheen and Abbas bowling extremely disciplined. But it is what it is. Nassim did pretty well, but I wouldn't put him in the same category as those five players. But it is what it is, you know. We lost the test match by 101 runs. It wasn't good enough, and I think places where we lost the game in quite a few areas, to be honest. I don't think fielding was a massively big issue, if I'm being honest. I didn't watch all of the game, but as far as what I knew, the fielding was okay. I think we lost the game, obviously, with the batting. Babar Azam wasn't there. We're looking at Babar Azam, someone who's averaging pretty much 59 test cricket, 45, I think. And we can bank on him for 50s to be converted to 60s, 70s, 80s. His conversion rate isn't crazy right now, but he has scored quite a few hundreds in the last few test matches he has played. So we would have looked to him to put up an extra 50, 60 per innings, if we're being honest, without sounding too reliant on him. Who else have we missed out on? I'd probably say going into the first test match, I would have expected Sahil Khan to be given the first. I know it's a bit of a risky move, but he's renowned for the, well, he's not renowned exactly, but the last time we saw him was 2016, England v Pakistan, if I remember correctly, was the last time he played for Pakistan, and he was bowling pretty well. He's seen as a more mature bowler now. He can bowl with the old and new ball, if we're being honest. Strong, big guy, coming in with the old ball and the new ball, and I actually would have expected him to be the cover for Nassim Shah. But Nassim Shah was given the cap. I don't know how I feel about that. Going into the next test, I'd probably say Nassim Shah is probably going to get the next test anyway, if we're being honest, just because of pitch conditions. But we're going to talk about that later. But let's go into very quickly how the day and the match went along. So obviously day one, like I said, it was a really, really good start for Pakistan. Shaheen Afridi came in the first ball and nicked straight through the gap in the slip cordon. Got Latham, got lucky one. It was a constant attack. He was bowling in his in-swingers, and then he had the ball that hold its line and go across him. So batsmen were constantly having a mental battle while facing 90-odd miles an hour of, you know, do I defend the ball, do I go at it or not? He got Latham out pretty early. I think we were 4-for-1 at that point. Blundell was looking really struggling. I think Blundell and Abbas formed a really good partnership with the ball. Abbas was on one end, bowling a nagging down the length, not letting them score with a limited pace to, you know, hit the ball off. And Shaheen Afridi was coming on the other end, extremely aggressive swing, good line of length, a lot of bounce, and he wasn't giving them a chance to score either. If anything, it was both, they were both attacking bowlers in the sense that Muhammad Abbas, you have to play every single ball because he'd bowl at you, but Shaheen was bowling a lot more with the swing, and it was sort of, you're having a mental battle more so, a technical battle of whether the ball's going to hold up or whether the ball's going to swing back in, and you've got limited time to think of it because he bowls at such a good pace as well. So Blundell was doing a pretty good job, if I'm being honest, but I think he just got caught out, fatigued, and he got out to Shaheen Afridi after Muhammad Abbas literally taunting him with the line and length, and he was struggling. Blundell is known for someone who plays off his back foot predominantly, and Muhammad Abbas is just a player that you have to play off the front foot with your front foot defence, so he was really nagging him. Eventually, obviously, got to him. Shaheen Afridi got his wicket. Kane Williamson and Ross Taylor then on came pretty early. Well, they put up a pretty good partnership, if we're being honest. Naseem Shah came around that time. Yasser bowled a couple overs before lunch. And Yasser was bowling pretty well just before lunch, just to try him out. And Naseem went full and wide. Ross Taylor capitalised on it. There was pretty immature bowling from there. At that point, Muhammad Abbas and Shaheen are off. Fahim came in, but Williamson, he did have a few dropped catches, if I'm not wrong, but overall him and Taylor had a crazy partnership. They put up, I don't know how many runs they put up together, let's double check on that. So it was 133 for 3 by the time Taylor got out, and then by the time Nichols got out, because he made his 56 as well, it was 266 for 4. So overall, Nichols, Williamson and Taylor had a really good partnership. They really took advantage of where Pakistan kind of dropped off. And like I said, before lunch, they were very disciplined. And after, we kind of lost that intensity a little bit. So Nichols, Williamson had no problem with taking advantage of that. Williamson playing extremely, extremely confidently and patiently, looking at every ball. His technique is honestly a coach's dream. He looks to play the ball extremely late, right over his eyes. If he leaves the ball, he watches the ball all the way through to the keeper. Not like Steve Smith and Labuschagne, but he definitely watches the ball, and you can see that with his contact points. He plays the ball right under his eyes if he does, and he doesn't take any chances to hit the ball if it doesn't need to be hit. If it's not in his line, unless it's full and wide, he will rarely hit it, because it's just a risk that doesn't need to be taken. And the end result, the end product, obviously, was him scoring in a crazy 129 when Pakistan looked like they were really dominating at the start. Ross Taylor scored a great 86. Henry Nichols scored a great 50. And at that point, I think we kind of lost it. At the end of day one, Pakistan had Nichols and Williamson still on. If I'm not wrong, I did mention that the second day was sort of cleaning up who was left and, you know, just damage control is what the term I used on TikTok. If you're not following me on TikTok, it's my blogs. I use the term damage control. At that point, it was getting Williamson out. I didn't think the back middle order were going to last too long, just because, if I'm not wrong, in the West Indies tour, they played of Daryl Mitchell and Devon Conway. So they wouldn't have had massive time batting out in the middle again in Test cricket so far. So I thought Pakistan would do a decent job with cleaning those players up. It obviously didn't happen. We managed to get Mitchell Santner out early, but BJ Watling, being the player he is, a gritty player, a bit like Williamson, scored a great 73 out of 50 strike rate. Carl Jamieson went a bit more attacking, was more than happy to play that role, batting at number 6 or 7, or 8 actually, I think, and scored his 32 of 69. And then Neil Wagner, I did mention Neil Wagner is a bit of a wild card, if you're being honest, a bit of a Mitchell Stark or Wahab Riaz. In the way he bats, you know, if you don't get him out, he will more than happily swing and, you know, swing his bat at you. And he did that. He scored a 16 or 19, if I'm not wrong. Yeah, 19. And Trent Bolt got 8. At that point, Pakistan bowled out New Zealand for 431. They didn't declare by any means. They took out for 431. And if you guys follow my TikTok, which again is Moblogs, all the stuff will be in the description, or if you go on my Twitter, Moblogs _, you'll find the link where you can see all those handles. But I did mention that Pakistan is probably going to be 380 under, mainly because of the fact that we're going to struggle anything above 380 with Babarazan missing. I didn't have a massive amount of confidence, as much as I love Pakistan and I support Pakistan through all the hardship we've been through. 380 plus was going to be a little bit of a struggle. I did think we were going to finish with a definite deficit confirmed. if they did score above 380. So I thought ideally under 380, and we can get the job done. We'll have enough time to bat out the next day or two and get a lead on if we can potentially do that, or just get those 380 runs. But Williamson did what he had to do. BJ Watling was a card, was a player that scored a lot more than I thought he should have, because I went really undisciplined at that point. They were kind of just throwing balls at them. BJ Watling took advantage of that and he scored his 70. And if we're being honest, that was one of the periods that we kind of lost the game. That second half, that third quarter of Pakistan's bowling in the first innings was when we went really undisciplined. We were just bowling bad line and then letting them score, letting them rotate, letting them tick the scoreboard around, and we kind of lost the game at that point. Or I call it the game, I lost the innings at that point. Pakistan really had a bad end to that innings, despite having, I think 26 for 2 at that point. So that was New Zealand's first innings. Pakistan came in the second innings, an unchanged order, Harris Hill coming in for the injured Babar Azam, if I'm not sure. I wouldn't say Fawad Alam was Babar Azam's cover, I'd say Harris Sahil was. But Shaun Masood batted at the end. Shaun Masood and Abid Ali had to open at the end of day two. Lost his wicket, Shaun Masood, very early. Tickled it down to BJ Watling across the leg side, a really stupid wicket. And it was annoying because, we had to play the night watchman, and ideally, if we could have survived, you could start thinking of things like, should Mohammad Abbas have opened and just taken the night watchman role from the very beginning? So having losing that first wicket without Pakistan really having anything on their favour when it was, hard conditions to bat in, wasn't the greatest start by any means for us. But we went into the second day. Abid Ali, actually the night before and the day before, during that last 20-25 minute period, was looking very, very strong. To play Neil Wagner in that bounce with those conditions, whereas the end of the day is generally seen as extremely hard to bat in, hence night watchman's coming in. Abid Ali batted really, really well. He was playing the ball under his eyes. He had no problem with facing the short ball from Neil Wagner, who likes to bump the batsman a lot. And I'd say that going into the next day, I was pretty confident with Abid Ali. I was hoping, maybe he should get a decent score, but he lost his wicket. Carl Jamieson was bowling good line and length, making him go on his toes, play the good length ball, and then went one fuller and completely caught him out. Mohammad Abbas did what he had to do. He batted out a really good 55 balls, even though he only got 5 runs. I wasn't looking to him to score runs anyway. Azhar Ali lost his wicket. Harris Hill lost his wicket for just 8 runs between those two batsmen, which was pretty disappointing for me. Azhar Ali, for someone who gets all the credit he does, I know he's still averaging 42 and he scored a crazy amount of runs for us. And I'd probably sound a little ungrateful for his services, but in recent times away, I think he's averaging about 20 runs or 15 runs, which isn't good enough, if we're being honest. We're not always going to be playing at home, and you can't be averaging those sort of runs and still be confident that your name's going to be in the next squad sheet or the next 11 for the next test match. And I think it needs to be made clear. Maybe it's a bit of an Alistair Cook situation where his back's on the wall and he's getting all this bad media attention, and he goes out and scores a 200. Honestly, if I'm the only person who's saying that, I really hope he do score a 200. But he did drop again. Harris Hill, one of my favourite batsmen from Pakistan right now, only got his 3 runs. I think got a leading edge to about fourth slip or gully. Fawad Alam lost his wicket early. It was a short ball which I think hit it straight over to BJ Watling. Mohammad Rizwan hit a really gritty 71 alongside Fahim Ashraf with his 91, which is a really sick partnership to see. I would have really, really relied on Mohammad Rizwan. I think Mohammad Rizwan scored an 80 in the last T20, about a week back before that first test. So for Rizwan, honestly, for Rizwan to score that many runs in the T20, I was very confident to bank him with some runs going into the test match, because you just have so much more time, and Mohammad Rizwan is naturally a more gritty player than he is in T20. In T20, we saw him timing the ball crazily, crazily good for six. He wouldn't. It was almost effortless the way he'd hit it over mid-wicket for six. So I was banking on him for those runs. Fahim Ashraf was a really impressive 91. To come back into Test cricket and score that 91 was an impressive knock. I'd call it a revenge knock. I've called it a revenge sort of comeback, the way he's come back into the team after a while because of bad performances. Come back into the team after a load of franchise cricket, had a bit of a stint with Northants, and has come back and done really well in the T20, had a really low economy rate, was only the really standout bowler across all three games, had one good stint with the bat, if I'm not wrong, about 30-odd, and has come back and scored a 91, which was, it wasn't by no means a, you know, a quick 91, 134 balls, with just 1 6, 15 fours at a 67 strike rate, so by no means it was a, you know, quick score of 91, but he slugged it. He looked devastated when he scored that, when he got out to on 91. I think it's a little bit bigger than the fact that he scored 100. You know, he was going on a really good, he had really good momentum, and he was looking to hold his wicket while, he was looking to score runs while the tailenders were just holding his wicket from that end of the wicket. So in that end, despite getting out for 239 all out, which was really disappointing, I'd say I had a little bit of hope going into the next innings, but I did have a lot of concerns with the top order. The likes of Azhar Ali, Haris Ahil, Fawad Alam, Shaan Masood and Abid Ali, not so much. Shaan Masood has generally pretty good stats right now in terms of averages. And I think he made the test, one of the test team of the year, I'm not sure, with some, it's one of the brands. And Abid Ali, I was thinking maybe it was just a poor wicket. He was going to come into the second innings and do well, but I was really looking towards Azhar Ali and Haris Ahil. I was like, these guys need to score runs. Azhar Ali especially, despite his name, I thought if he doesn't score, there's going to be some real bad media attention towards him, of whether he should still be in the team, whether Imran Butt should have been played. If we looked at Pakistan's A game against New Zealand just before the first test, Imran didn't score a pile of runs, but he did look really good in a New Zealand condition. So I was, at that point, New Zealand had a deficit, had a lead actually of 190-odd, which was a good start for them. They wouldn't have been looking back to bat for too long. And, you know, going into the next innings, Latham scored a 50, Blundell scored a 50, Kane Williams got out early. This was the innings where I said Nasim Shah sort of stood up and kind of rose from the dead, if we're being honest. Took his three wickets at 4.4, he took out Latham, took out Williamson, took out Henry Nichols, and then Nassim, and then Mohammed Abbas got Blundell again. But going into that, I think Kane Williamson, I was talking about it on a thread on Twitter, that Kane Williamson made a really, really smart move. 380 is the total that they ended up setting because they declared on 180 for 5. 380 on about, I think it was about 2 days or a day and a bit, is a really, really, really clever score. Pakistan was struggling in their first innings, and 380 is both a score where you think, in one sort of half, you'd say that 380 is by all means an achievable score, but on the other hand, you're saying, you know, we've only got out for 239 in the first innings, we're going to need a really incredible miracle here with someone standing up, or two people standing up, and we probably should push for the draw and just play it on the safe side, and by all means, just you bat it out, because we can't really lose that first test. So 380, Atif Nawaz, I think, mentioned it as well, so shout out to him, was saying as well that 380 has, Kane Williamson did a really good job in declaring for 380, because it's going to play on their minds when they get, start looking like they're going to get close and New Zealand lose a bit of momentum. At least they have that mental pressure that they put on Pakistan, that yes, we look like we're going to get close, should we go for the win, and then mistakes start popping up, and New Zealand just capitalise on that and get right back in the game, which for me was a big, big decision. And it was a risk that I think they were willing to take, just because they were at home. If they were away, I don't think they would have played a risk like that. But it was a good choice by Williamson to go for that 380 declare. Pakistan needed 380 to win, they needed 380 to draw, they needed to bat out the day and a half. In a place where the pitch was sort of cracking up, it wasn't doing a huge amount for the batsmen or the bowlers, but they're obviously at home, so they naturally have an advantage with the conditions. They got Abid Ali out early, they got Shaan Masood out early. At that point, I was annoyed. You know, I was thinking, we're going to get out for 150 tops, someone's just going to do a gritty 30, and that's about it. Azhar Ali was looking pretty decent until he lost his wicket. Haris Ahil, another low score, and despite Haris, you know, scoring low, going into the next test, he's probably going to lose his place naturally, just because Babar Azam, hopefully, is going to be back if he's recovered enough and he's fit enough for the next test. And then, at that point, we had Fawad Alam and Mohammad Rizwan. So Pakistan were really struggling at that point, and we were looking for a real stand-up innings. At that point, I don't think we had any intentions of trying to win the game. By all means, it was take Pakistan to a respectable score and, you know, drop at that point if needed. We would have, I think a lot of fans would have expected Pakistan to just take up for Rizwan and Fawad to attempt to take Pakistan to a respectable score and not take out the draw, because I don't think it would have been an objective at that point. But the partnership they put out, honestly, it was amazing. It was 150 plus. Fawad Alam, I think, finished the day on 80, and Rizwan finished on something. But the grittiness of those innings, if you look at the innings itself, 102 from Fawad Alam of 269, 14 fours. So that is how many? That's 54 runs or 56 runs. That's 56 runs or fours, and so that's only half of his runs or fours, and that's at 37 strike rate. So it's by no means, you know, an attacking game. It was extremely gritty. If you watched the game, you would have seen how great those innings was because of his technique. The bowlers are very inclined and tempted to bowl a lot fuller. His stance naturally means and assumes that he could play well off the short ball, and he's more than happy to because of how high his bat lift is. And that led to Bolt and Southee looking to bowl a lot fuller, trap him on the front leg, because he looked a bit awkward on that in the first innings. And they thought, why not do that again and then trap him with the short ball if it doesn't work. But his technique is actually solid. I don't know why people are getting onto him. Steve Smith has an awkward technique. Shivnarine Chanderpaul is one of the leading run scorers of all time, and he had a similar technique to Fawad Alam. So first of all, I don't know why people are getting onto him, and despite his shuffle to the wicket, by the time the ball is released, he's in as good position as any other player. It's just his, you know, his natural stance where he holds his balance that looks a bit awkward. But he has a solid technique. He's got tons of run in domestic cricket. I think it was a stupid idea for New Zealand to think to trap him on the front foot. I guess in the circumstance, in the context, yes. But I don't think it was a very smart move, because they were constantly trapping on the front foot, and he was either blocking him, leaving it, or just tapping it for a single, because he had no problem with that, and he was looking really good. Same with Mohammad Rizwan, playing some really nice shots. 60 off 191, another gritty innings of 31 strike rate. And if we're being honest, at that point, looking to draw the game was a big possibility, and looking to win it was slightly growing bit by bit. And we were thinking, you know, can Pakistan pull this off? It would have honestly been a miracle victory and a historic victory, not by statistics, but also because of the context, because you'd have to watch the game. You know, cricket's a lot bigger than just the scorecard, and it would have really been a historic game. But they lost their wickets. They both fell pretty successively. Rizwan lost his wicket first. He had a little talk with Fawad Alam. I'm not exactly sure what he said. It probably was play out for the draw and bat it out with Fahim Ashraf. And all eyes are on Fahim Ashraf as well, scoring 91 in the first innings. We would have expected a big score. Hopefully, you know, he could do it in the first one, in the second, that general mentality. But he didn't score, 19 of 28, and it all kind of fell down from there. And that's where Pakistan lost the game. 271 all out. We lost by 101 runs. So overall, yes, it's a disappointing result. Yes, we lost Babar Azam. Are we relying on Babar Azam at the top order? Potentially, yes. But I'm saying that only in away games. And at home, well, I think the top order is more than comfortable. Azhar Abid and Shan are more than comfortable at scoring a load of runs. Same with Haris Sahil. Just, you know, they got caught out. And if we're being honest, if you're trying to draw out the silver lining from all of this, it was sort of, you could say that despite all of this, Pakistan put a decent fight up with the bat with Babar Azam's absence, and with Babar Azam they're only going to get stronger. You know, fingers crossed he is fit for the next game. It hasn't actually been confirmed yet. We're going to find out, you know, right before the team gets announced, but I really hope that he does. And if he doesn't, then in terms of selection changes, Haris Sahil is probably going to have to get dropped, if we're being honest. If Babar Azam comes back, he's going to go. If he doesn't come back, it's going to be a real choice of, do you play Haris Sahil or do you play Imran Butt and give him his debut? Because he has scored tons of runs in domestic cricket. He's earned a national call-up. He's got his squad place. He played pretty well in the New Zealand A game. But at the very same time, the next pitch is said to be a lot faster, a lot bouncier, a little bit more batting friendly. And you'd say that Harrison Hill likes playing on pitches with a lot more bounce. I think he got caught out with a load of greens, so the swing caught him out. You could see that in the first innings where he was getting leading edges. He was pushing forward and just couldn't get out to this. He just got out to the swing. So it's going to be a real, real tough decision for Misbah Haq and the new selector who's just been taken in. Of do you play Haris Sahil when if Barber doesn't come back? If Barber is coming back, by all means put him in. I don't think Azarelli's going to lose his place just because of experience, and he'll be higher in the pecking order. But if he isn't, then does Haris Sahil stay, or do you put Imran Bhatt in as the new number four for that time being? If you do play Imran Bhatt, then it's sort of a thing of, okay, he scores a 50, are we going to do? And say the rest of the team performs and Imran Bhatt scores a 50, are we now going to do what we did to Fawad Alam and drop him because there isn't a place for him at the time? And just to touch on it, I read a really interesting article that actually made a lot of sense. When Fawad Alam made his debut, as far as I remember, he made it for a cover. And despite scoring 126 in debut, where he batted number 5, and he batted number 5 in domestic cricket for a stupid amount of years, and he still does, and he batted number 5 in this test. At that time, Pakistan had Misbah Haq, Tuk Tuk, they call him, the gritty 45 strike rate kind of player. Tons of runs for Pakistan, great leader. So losing his, trying to keep his place at number 5, somewhere he's batted for his whole career, he didn't like playing, or he struggled in playing any other positions. And number 5 was perfect for him. He was caught of a one position player. And at that time, he had Misbah Haq. When Misbah Haq left, we had Asif Shafiq and, you know, Asami Aslams and all those kind of players. I think Asif Shafiq and Misbah being the main ones. So as much as you can bring politics into this, and, you know, it could be a case of politics, I can't speak for them. There is also the thing of Fawad Alam lost his place because it was just bad luck. It was honestly just bad luck. That's got to be a contributing factor. He's batting at 5, where he batted his whole career. He can't really bat anywhere else. And because of circumstances, you had a Misbah Haq and then you had Asif Shafiq, who could score 40s and, you know, still stay in the test team for the next series. It was just bad place, bad time. And are we going to do the same thing for Imran Bhatt? If you play Imran Bhatt and he scores a 65 both innings, or just one innings, which is good enough, are you going to then have to drop him because Babar Azam's back for the third, when the test ends and the series ends? Because I think it's a two-match series. Yeah, it's a two-match series. Will Imran Bhatt ever feature for Pakistan again? Because they've got Azhar at 3, they've got 2 solid openers. Imam's going to be there as a cover when he comes back from injury. Fawad Alam's just scored his 100. Rizwan's stood up as a with 60 and 70 in the first innings. Fahim Ashraf scored his 90 in the first innings. So there actually isn't a place for him in the test squad. It's as bad as it sounds, there isn't a place for him. So it's a real, real tough decision to be made. And it's going to be one that Pakistan or the management are going to have a real tough choice to make, and I think they're going to face controversy either way. But it's going to be interesting to see how first of all, who's going to be there for who, the reason behind it, and then how the test goes. Hopefully Pakistan can get the win. I don't want them really to lose the next series and end there. I don't think they're playing ODIs. Well, yeah, they're not playing ODIs, so it'd be sad to see that they finish both. I'd rather see them lose and win, draw a series and lose a series, rather than you lose both test series. So that kind of sums up the whole test. I want you guys to let me know when this comes out. I think this comes out, by the time this comes out, you'll have about 2 hours before the next test. Let me know which changes you would have made. Why would you have made them? Who comes in for who? Why? Have I made the right choices? Did I describe the match perfectly? Are there any places that you think that I didn't, or are there any people you think I didn't give enough recognition to? Tell me who your standout performers were from the New Zealand side, barring, you know, Neil Wagner playing with 2 broken toes and Williamson's 126. Who were the standout players for you? I think BJ Watling had an incredible innings. I think Ross Taylor had a good partnership with Momentum. I think he's the most appearing New Zealand player of all time in that test match. Henry Nicholls had a good first innings. Blundell and Latham both performed in the second. So tell me who your performers were for that. Innings and that game from New Zealand's point of view. And like always, if you're listening to this on YouTube and you're watching me on YouTube, like, comment, subscribe, let me know your thoughts there. If you're listening to this on an audio platform, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and iTunes, follow the page, give us a rating and a review, and I'll see you guys in the next episode. Story about a woman with dreams, so picture perfect at 13 and ebony queen. Beneath the surface, it was more than just a quick smile. Nobody knew about a secret, so it took a while. I could see a tear fall slow down a black.